This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It may be simplistic to call the Buffalo Springfield America's answer to the Beatles, but the band did produce a number of brilliant careers after its short life ended. Bootlegs have circulated for years, but now the band's definitive summing up has arrived. Today, armed with the new Buffalo Springfield box set, rock historian Ed Ward tells their story.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Nobody involved seems to remember just how it was the Buffalo Springfield came together, although they all agree the band was named after a steamroller. Stephen Stills and Richie Furay were members of the Ogogo Singers, a supper club folk act. And while on tour in Canada, they met Neil Young, son of a famous sports writer and a guy who went back and forth between solo performance and being in a band called the Mina Birds with bassist Bruce Palmer and a black American singer named Rick James. The Mina Birds collapsed, and Young and Palmer took off for Hollywood to be discovered. It was 1966, a good year for that.
Haze that's stomping all over my face. Where's that silhouette I'm trying to trace? Who's putting sponge in the bells I once rung and taking my gypsy before she's begun to sing in the meaning of what's in my mind before I can take home what's rightfully mine? Joining in and listening and talking in a rhyme, stopping sing.
Unfortunately, fame didn't come to the two Canadians, so they decided to strike out for San Francisco, where they'd heard good things were happening. They got into Neil's old hearse and were driving down Sunset Boulevard when Stills and Furay, driving in the other direction, saw them. Only one person would have a hearse with Ontario plates, Stills reasoned, so he had Furay turn them around and chase the car. The four went somewhere to jam, and a band was born. Their first success was Nowadays Clancy Can't Even Sing, one of Neil Young's songs, with Furay and Stills singing, and it sounded good enough that they quickly started writing. Soon they had a drummer, another Canadian named Dewey Martin, and managers with a track record. They also managed Sonny and Cher, and before long had signed the Buffalo Springfield to Atco Records. Clancy was released as a single and went nowhere, but there was an album on the way.
Been burned and with both feet on the ground. I've learned that it's painful coming down. No use running away, and there's no time left to stay. Now I'm finding out that it's so confusing. No time left, and I know I'm.
The album, entitled Buffalo Springfield, was filled with brilliant songs, played with an offhand virtuosity that sounded easy. And right after it was released, Stills was on his way to the Sunset Strip and found his way blocked by turmoil, the famous Sunset Strip riots. He went home, and about 10 minutes later, he'd written For What It's Worth, which became the band's biggest and only hit. Unfortunately, Charlie Green and Brian Stone, their managers, fancied themselves record producers, and the first album was marred by horrible sound. That was just the first of the problems that would doom this great band. The second was a trip to New York, where Bruce Palmer got busted for pot and deported. The band continued to record and write, however, but in May 1967, Neil Young quit, claiming his work wasn't appreciated in the band. Palmer rejoined, and a couple of months later, so did Young.
Every time you touch her, set your hands on fire. Is all that she requires, and you hang on, hang on, hang on to the words of
the band recorded group material like that on the first album, like this rough take of a Neil Young song, Down to the Wire, more and more, the second album was looking like a series of solo projects pressed onto one record.
Listen to my bluebird laugh. She can't tell you why. Deep within her heart, you see, she knows all I cry.
Stephen Stills' Bluebird was a guitar duel standout of their live show, and condensing it to 4.5 minutes on record made it all the more powerful, especially when someone had the brilliant idea of tacking on a banjo coda at the end. As for Neil Young, he was hanging out with L.A.'s pop avant-garde, including a brilliant arranger named Jack Nitzsche. Only member of the Buffalo Springfield on Expecting to Fly, and from the demos he was recording at this time, it seems clear he was heading out in another direction from the rest of the band.
Don't call Pretty Peggy, she can't hear you no more. Don't leave no message round her back door. They say the old laughing lady been here before. While she don't keep time, she don't count score.
But a second album, entitled Buffalo Springfield Again, finally did come out, with Bluebird, Expecting to Fly, and another Neil Young avant-garde opus, Broken Arrow. Buffalo Springfield Again should have been their big break, but once again the law got Bruce Palmer, and this time he stayed in Canada. Jim Messina, a studio technician who'd been around while they were recording the second album, took over on bass and helped them compile tracks for a third album. But the band had lost too much money, and as 1968 drew on, it was clear Buffalo Springfield couldn't continue. A final album called Last Time Around came out, but the band had already scattered by the time it did, and Neil Young and Jack Nitzsche were already recording Neil's first solo album. Buffalo Springfield had only lasted 25 months, but they'd set a standard few bands have approached since.
Rock historian Ed Ward lives in Berlin. He reviewed a new box set of the band Buffalo Springfield. This is Fresh Air.